This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, February 3rd. I'm Angela Dunning. Residents and borough staff in Petersburg are trying to come to grips with state regulations for marijuana that take effect later this month. The regulations create a new licensing process for businesses that could grow, test, and sell pot in the state. But they have some in Petersburg thinking the hurdles for new pot businesses will be too difficult, and local marijuana sales will remain underground and off the books. Joe Vicknicki reports.
A subcommittee of Petersburg's Marijuana Regulation Advisory Committee met about permitting and taxation requirements in late January. Chair Kevin Clark questioned the testing requirements in the new regs.
The one thing that is really going to make it more difficult for locally is the testing, having to ship it out to be tested when you can't ship it out.
Right.
So, and then, you know, building a testing facility here or that would be prohibitively expensive considering the kind of volume you'd have to generate in order to justify it.
Without somebody building a testing facility in Petersburg, the requirement would mean sending samples off the island to a larger community with such a facility, and that would mean shipping those samples by a commercial airline, state ferry, or some other transport. Problem is that transport is prohibited by federal law, and that has local residents thinking that the testing off-island cannot happen. Between the requirements for testing and the licenses needed for new businesses, subcommittee members did not seem to think any pot businesses would be opening up anytime soon. Here's Chuck Rose.
Oh, so what we're going to wind up with is an underground period.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
That's what they're encouraging.
Communities can pass local laws that are more restrictive than the state regulations or even opt out of the legal pot experiment altogether. So far, there's been little interest in going in that direction here. Clark thought the state's regulations were restrictive enough.
There's a reason I haven't heard of anybody planning on starting a business here. I haven't heard of anybody looking for licenses. I haven't heard of any. There's been no rumor of it. I don't know, has anybody else heard of anybody going to start a shop?
Well, the subcommittee decided to take no action on making recommendations. Members said they did not want to recommend any local restrictions that would be more burdensome than the new state regulations.
I believe that people will be able to transport marijuana around this state, licensee to licensee, with a transportation manifest from the seed-to-sell software system and all of the requirements that are required in the regulations.
That's Cynthia Franklin, director of the state's Marijuana Control Board. She noted that people are focused on the federal prohibition on transporting marijuana.
But what everyone seems to be forgetting is that the entire operation is prohibited by federal law. In other words, growing marijuana is prohibited by federal law. Testing marijuana is prohibited by federal law. Everything about this activity is prohibited by federal law. Marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance on the Federal Controlled Substances Act.
Franklin agreed it comes down to what laws the federal government will enforce, and she said the only guidance Alaska has is a 2013 memo from U.S. Deputy Attorney General James Cole that outlines federal priorities for law enforcement in states that have voted to legalize pot. That memo says the feds will require states to implement robust regulatory controls on the pot industry, and it says federal law enforcement will focus on things like keeping pot out of the hands of minors and prohibiting transport to states that haven't legalized. Franklin does not yet know how pot transport for testing will happen, but she believes it will. She said she's much more worried about Alaska opening up pot businesses only 500 feet from schools. That's the buffer in the new state regulations, and it's based on Alaska's drug-free school zone distance, but it's half of the federal buffer requirement.
The buffer zone issue is a much bigger issue and much more likely to attract the Fed's attention, from my perspective, than a small amount of marijuana being sent from Petersburg to Anchorage for testing.
Franklin said Alaska, unlike other states with legal pot, is breaking new ground with a proposed buffer zone smaller than the federal requirement. Petersburg has asked for an even smaller buffer zone of 200 feet because the 500-foot distance would rule out most of the downtown business district for new businesses. Franklin does think a new pot industry will be able to operate in a small town like Petersburg.
The people in small communities are saying the regulations favor urban communities, but they're saying that because they haven't sat down and they don't understand the relationship between the regulations and what they say and the federal enforcement priorities, because we cannot change federal law with regulations promulgated by the Marijuana Control Board.
The state's regulations don't take effect until February 21st. The state plans to offer training for businesses to get through the application process. That's in Anchorage, February 17th and 18th. But Franklin said the training would be videotaped and posted on the state's website. Forms for new businesses to apply are not yet ready. The Marijuana Control Board is scheduled to approve those on February 11th, and the state plans to be ready to accept applications on February 24th. Meanwhile, Petersburg's borough staff has started drafting a local ordinance for pot businesses. Borough Assembly members this month said they wanted to wait until the new regulations take effect before finishing up with that new local law. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And we have links to the state regulations along with the memo on federal law enforcement priorities. It's posted on our website, kfsk.org, along with this story. Coast Guard and their families stationed here in Petersburg were honored Friday night at a packed Sons of Norway Hall. Attendees shared food and listened to accounts of Coast Guard rescues from years past. I went to the event, and here's the story. More than 25 active duty officers and crew of the cutters Anacapa and Elderberry call Petersburg home. Lieutenant Peter Vermeer, commanding officer of the Anacapa, spoke at the event, thanking Petersburg for the recognition.
Having come from Washington, D.C. before I showed up here, I was surrounded by government servants. I was surrounded by other federal workers. So it seemed unusual to me that I might deserve some sort of special praise, or that we might deserve some special praise. But after reflection and discussion with many of the citizens of Petersburg, I've come to understand that the neighborly respect for the Coast Guard here in Petersburg is born out of missions that have been accomplished across Alaska, past and present.
One of those past rescues was in February of 1994, when the crab boat crew on the 58-foot Angela Marie was saved in Cross Sound. A photo of the boat covered a big screen, while the crowd listened to an emotional Mayday call. "We hear you," the Coast Guard answers. "Repeat your position." Then you hear crew member Pete Erickson again begging for help. "We're going down," he said. "Somebody help us, please." You hear the Coast Guard again, then nothing. Again the Coast Guard, and again nothing. The boat sank within 4 minutes, which Skipper Charlie Christensen called a terrifying experience. He said the boat was sinking stern first, so the crew climbed out through the wheelhouse, or skylight.
And got our survival suits that were frozen just about solid, because it was blowing 70 northerly, gusting 100, and wind chill factor maybe 50 below. So it was quite cold.
It was nighttime. The five crew members ripped the suits out of their cases and managed to get them on, except for one person who went overboard with it under his arm. Meanwhile, Christensen tried to stay above the water's surface.
And at that time, the Angela Marie was right underneath me. I got tangled up in its rigging in those big swells and was being pulled underwater. Going to go down with the boat, but it was just enough buoyancy in the boat that when I went down and came up again with that survival suit on, it was just enough to get untangled from whatever lines or rigging I was tangled in.
The crew spent over an hour in the water. Still, Christensen said a lot of lucky things happened after the boat went under. The survival raft popped up right beside the only crew member who wasn't wearing a suit. A Coast Guard helicopter from Sitka found them in a storm. Even Christensen, who was floating away on a piece of decking from the boat. Then during the rescue, the helicopter broke a part that prevented it from hovering, so it had to land back in Sitka like an airplane, which it did safely. The Coast Guard Appreciation Event was sponsored by the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. Director John Haverlick donned a red neoprene survival suit at the podium.
It's just one amazing story after another, and they... It's just hard to imagine what these people have done, and you know, thank God they're here with us, and thank you all for coming. We expected about 100, and we have about twice that many.
Attendees watched a 6-minute video of the Coast Guard rescuing the crew off the 80-foot Kuprinoff last summer near Cape Fairweather. The crew of the tender boat was on their way from Petersburg to Bristol Bay. Skipper Steve Barry talked back and forth to the Coast Guard in the helicopter.
I've got one man that's pretty old and can't
flip. Water was coming up to the back door. I told everybody, okay, put on your survival suits. This is it.
Like Christensen, Barry recounted lucky scenarios during the unfortunate experience.
That life raft blew right around the bow, went right by Palmer, who couldn't swim. He was the one that jumped in there. He's also the strongest man on the boat. And it drifted back, you know, so he's in the raft, and he picked us all up like drowning kittens as we went by, you know.
Barry implored people in the audience to try on their survival suits and keep their gear in check on their boats. Although he said he wished he didn't have to be up there telling his story, he knows he was just one of a long list of people rescued by the Guard.
I wake up every morning and I have to realize the boat went down, but my crew didn't.
Coast Guard Cutter Anacapa is an island-class patrol boat. It helps provide search and rescue capabilities in the southeast, as well as conduct ports and waterways security, national defense, and law enforcement. The Elderberry is a buoy tender. Its crew helps mark the inside passage, maintaining buoys and lights. Again, Lieutenant Vermeer, commander of the Anacapa.
It's incredibly rewarding to be publicly appreciated like this, and I would address my crew and let them know that it is not like this everywhere. So enjoy it while it lasts. Petersburg is a very special place. Thank you.
It was the first Coast Guard appreciation put on by the Petersburg community. Mayor Mark Jensen said they should consider making it an annual event. In other news, the Chilkat Indian Village in Clukwan is trying to preserve its main salmon resource, the Chilkat River, with the highest environmental protection available. If the river is named an outstanding national resource water, it would be protected from activities that degrade water quality. But there is no system in place here in Alaska to evaluate this kind of water protection request. That could change with a bill in the state legislature that would put these types of decisions in the hands of lawmakers. KHNS's Emily Files has more from Haines.
The Chilkat River borders Haines and Clukwan, extending 50 miles through southeast Alaska and Canada. For generations, it's provided salmon to the people in the Upper Lynn Canal.
That's like our Fred Meyer or Safeway and stores like that. That's where we get our food from.
Chilkat Indian Village Tribal Council President Jones Hotch Jr. says this past summer was the worst subsistence harvest he's seen.
I believe this is like a shot across our bow, like a warning to us, a signal that we should do something.
That's why the village nominated the river as an outstanding national resource water. The purpose of the designation is to give waters of exceptional recreational or ecological significance the highest protection under federal law. But right now, the law is in limbo. The Federal Clean Water Act requires states to put a method in place to evaluate these water nominations, but Alaska hasn't figured out a method yet. For years, the State Department of Environmental Conservation has worked toward regulations. Earl Krapps is with the DEC.
The consequences of this protection level are that the water quality must be maintained and protected.
In most Alaska waters, the state can allow activities that degrade water quality to a certain extent. With the outstanding resource status, also called a Tier 3 designation, no degradation is allowed unless it's temporary and has limited impact. Because of the strict limitations of that protection, some Haines residents are pushing back against the Chilkat River nomination.
The economics of this town does not depend just on fish.
That's Gary Hess, speaking at a local Fish and Game Advisory Council meeting. Some at the meeting wondered how it would impact mining, logging, and other industries. DEC's Kraps says because of the significant ramifications of the protection, his department thinks it should be up to lawmakers to decide the fate of the outstanding resource proposals.
Tier 3 designation goes beyond water quality. It would have impacts in other areas, for example, land use, because any sort of degradation to the water wouldn't be allowable. And so because of that, it needed a higher level of approval authority.
Senate Bill 163 and House Bill 283 were introduced by request from the governor in the legislature on January 29th. If approved, DEC would submit outstanding resource nominations to the legislature once every year for a decision. Right now, there are three nominations sitting on DEC's lap, waiting for a process to be decided. They are the Chilkat River, Kokutulee River, and the Bristol Bay Watershed. Hotch, from the Chilkat Indian Village, says he is not discouraged by the long wait or the resistance from other locals.
Our resolve is strong. This is not just for us, it's for our children's children's children. So far, you know, down the line, the generations that are yet to come. And we want to do this to also honor the past members of the Chilkat Indian Village.
In the meantime, the bills that would give the legislature power to decide on the nominations have been referred to the House and Senate Resources Committees. Reporting from Klukwan and Haynes, I'm Emily Files.
And I'm Angela Dunning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening. Coming up on KFSK, I'll have the weather forecast and community calendar. Then it will be the Street Beat Show with Mazani Rahani. At 2:35 this afternoon, KFSK's Sideline Sports. At 2:40, High Country with Pat Hind. At 4 p.m., it's NPR's All Things Considered. Another local newscast at 4:30. At 6 o'clock, Alaska News Nightly. At 6:30, Ebb Tide with Chelsea Tremblay. At 9 o'clock tonight, Folk Sampler with Mike Flynn. Then at 10 p.m., Radio Free Petersburg with Ben Wasilowski, and at midnight, the BBC World Service, live from London.